You are listening to a Nerd Room podcast production. We the Nerd. Bunch of nerds.
Hey everyone, welcome to Nerd Room. We talk all things Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and beyond. This is episode number 390. We're discussing the Acolyte trailer, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire hype, Furiosa, Mad Max, and the return of Spider-Man to the theaters. I'm one of your hosts, Tim.
And I am Ian.
Ian, welcome back to the Nerd Room. You're back from making the world a much better place. You're here in the Nerd Room this week to talk about a pretty exciting slate. Mm-hmm. Things including a new Star Wars show, the return of Ghostbusters to the big screen with Frozen Empire. We've got a brand new trailer from the Mad Max saga film Furiosa, and also Spider-Man. These Spider-Men are returning to the big screen, only in the US, but nonetheless, they're returning to the big screen. But our biggest piece of news this week is, of course, Ian emerging from a whirlwind trip across Japan and work. Man, how's it feel to be back in the Nerd Room here talking some nerd?
Man, I am excited. I am super excited. And what a week to come back, man. It's like,
yes,
actually this morning I woke up because of the time difference. I'm just being bombarded with all this cool stuff, and man, I've been like watching trailers, and yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy one. So yeah, really excited, man. It's been a busy few weeks. I kind of thought I'd lost my chair to AI with your earlier episode. You know, my regular job is kind of disappearing to AI, so I thought my podcast seat was gone. But
never.
But no. But yeah, it's great to actually jump on here and talk some nerd and kind of get some of that stress, some of that tension out, man. That's been building up over the last few weeks, and can't wait. What great topics. You know, some of our favorites being Star Wars and Ghostbusters. And yeah, man, like, I can't wait. Can't wait to jump in.
Yeah, you've certainly picked a good one, like you said, to come back for, because it's been kind of slow ebbs and flows through all of this. But we've got this nice nexus point of what looks to be the next phase of shows and movies we're going to be talking about here, with, of course, the kickoff of the big nerd movie going season with Ghostbusters. You know, we came off the back end of Dune there. We're walking into Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'm super, super excited about that. We've got to see a little sneak peek through some other podcasts and other things going on, fanfare going on with the global, or I guess the world premiere of Frozen Empire last week. And then, like you said, we were treated today, and that's why we always record, just for some behind the scenes, we always record the Nerd Room either on Tuesday or Wednesday. And the one reason way back when we chose Tuesday was that it seemed to always allow us to catch the front end, the tip of the spear of trailers and news. Specifically, Tuesday, for whatever reason, is a day that the studios usually drop big trailers. And today was absolutely no different, because not only a couple days ago did we get the tease with a new poster that the Acolyte trailer was indeed dropping today on Tuesday, but then WB dropped the Furiosa Mad Max Saga trailer as well, trailer number 2, before that comes out here in May. And so it's always awesome that we get to essentially see the trailer, stew on it throughout the day, and then hop on the mics here in the Nerd Room and talk around that trailer. And we're not going to waste, like we're going to jump straight into this, because it's been a minute since we talked robustly about Star Wars. And the Acolyte, I think, is the perfect thing to kick off Star Wars in 2024. Yes, there's been the Bad Batch, the animated stuff and all that. I'm talking live action here. You know, we came off of a super strong 2023, in my opinion, with, of course, Ahsoka. And was Andor in 23, or was that in 2022? I can't remember.
But 23?
I can't remember. Anyways, the last couple of shows, Mando was in there somewhere too. Was it Mando and Ahsoka? I can't remember. it's a bit of a blur the last couple of years, but nonetheless, we've been coming off a pretty hot streak of Star Wars shows with Andor, Mando season 3. We also had Ahsoka, of course, in there, which was absolute peak Star Wars. And now we've got The Acolyte, which my first general impression of the trailer is the same thing that they did with Mando, is that they've given us familiar, but in a completely different setting with completely different characters, which I think really benefited The Mandalorian, and that show absolutely took off. And when I look at The Acolyte, I'm getting the same vibe that I got with Mando, in the sense that we get all this familiar iconography, Star Wars-isms inside of that, and that being more of on The Mandalorian, the more Star Wars universe side of it. We're getting kind of the same, or at least I'm getting the same impression here, but on the Jedi side of the story, where it's lightsabers, it's Jedi robes, it's Coruscant, it is the Jedi Temple, it is all of those elements, a light and the dark, but it's with characters that we aren't connected to in any way. And that is the thing, and we're going to get into the trailer more, but that is the thing that excites me the most about this, is that it has the potential to kind of kick off something completely new inside of the Star Wars universe, but with familiar elements. And so you're going to feel that immediate connection into the story.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a very, very different story. I'd love to hear your kind of first high-level thoughts on The Acolyte here, and then we'll get into the details of this Disney Plus show that is debuting on June 4th. So just a couple months here in 2024.
Yeah, like exactly the same. I think that's kind of a good choice for them to go with as well at Lucasfilm, because I think, you know, a lot of people have been asking for lightsabers, you know, this, especially the kind of more general audience. You know, a lot of the stuff that we've been getting recently doesn't really have that. And as soon as Ahsoka came back and we were seeing some lightsaber battles, you know, everyone got really excited again and people jumped back in. And I think that's what people like to see, this kind of big fantasy, sci-fi kind of story, epic. And I think that's what we're kind of getting with this. So yeah, that's kind of the vibe I got. Seeing it, for me, kind of my first impressions were kind of weird, because it was kind of a balance of, you know, excitement but also a little confusion. I think it's not, for me, it actually doesn't look like anything that I was expecting. I was either kind of expecting a lot more in the past, you know, it seems like this one's set probably, you know, it's kind of the end of the High Republic era. Yes, so it seems to be kind of about 100 years or so prior to the Skywalker saga. Whereas I was expecting it to be further, maybe even thousands. And it also, I also thought that it was being called the Acolyte, I actually thought it was going to focus a little bit more on kind of the Night Sisters and things like Dathomir and stuff. And especially with those being introduced in Ahsoka, and seeing them, you know, the Night Sisters, and them being cast out to the Outer Rim and so on. I thought we were going to see more of that, and I thought that was going to be the kind of dark side of it, rather than it being, you know, Jedi Sith. But hey, man, like I'm super excited about it. Like it raises a lot of questions for me, which is going to be interesting. I'm going to have to talk to people about the High Republic, because I only read the first book and some of the comics, and I kind of lost interest in a way, because it was just so big. There were so many names, and I didn't know who anybody was, and I was getting really confused by what's going on. And there are so many characters that I found it a little harder to connect with them. But it'd be interesting to hear from, you know, some of the people who are big on that, like Rick over at what's it called? Transmissions?
Gem Transmissions.
I mean, I can't wait to listen to his podcast, because I'm sure he can answer some of those questions.
Absolutely.
But yeah, just seeing the trailer, like it looked very Star Wars-y. It looked kind of, you know, a mix of the prequel and the original trilogy, that kind of new and the old, which I love. Just seeing all those, you know, Jedis and in their robes and the different color lightsabers, man, and I'm hyped. I'm super excited for this. But I am, again, equally confused, because we know of certain characters that existed around that time, and it makes me wonder, are they touching on those things, and And what is the focus of this? Is it the fall of the High Republic? Is it that transition to, you know, the Jedi Council joining the Republic and being kind of governed by a government rather than them being independent? So yeah,
it's definitely an interesting era, like you said, the High Republic. And the High Republic is, from my knowledge at least, it was something that was developed quite a few years back by a group of creatives in more the written space. And so it was essentially a cohesive part of the Star Wars story that was told through both written novels and comic books that was all kind of connected up. And they actually had like a pretty robust story group that included the likes of like Charles Soule and that, who had a heavy hand in relaunching the Marvel comic Star Wars runs. And there's was a lot of great creatives involved in it when they announced it. And it was meant to be this nicely contained piece of it. And I think it's gone out to some great success. There's a ton of content there. I never personally got into it. It just was, for me, it just, at the stage I was at with Star Wars, I was just happy with the live action stuff and some of the animated. And but it,
well, man, like the problem was that there was so much of it. They were dropping novels, you know, first one came out and then the second one, and then it just went out of control. And then, I mean, I think people are demanding there is more because people are loving it. I've heard people saying that that kind of whole era and those stories, they kind of wish that creativity had been brought into the sequel trilogies, because there are some really great stories there. And like, I started to read the comic books and then it just branched off into different character spin-offs, and different versions and prequels and sequels. And it's like, man, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know which one I'm supposed to be reading now. Like, when you spend a month between comic books, it's like, I've got like 30 characters to remember. It's very hard. And I can see how those diehard fans who love that High Republic stuff are probably really excited about this, and there's probably some stuff that we can learn from that. Yeah,
and I think at some point we'll have to have Rick jump on the show here to give us a bit of a download on the High Republic and where it's going and how it potentially connects up with the Acolyte here. And I agree with you, like, that's the one thing I struggled with in Star Wars. And I think if you are solely focused on Star Wars, I think a lot of that is manageable, the books, the comics. But if you veer outside of that in any capacity, it becomes very difficult. Like, when they relaunched canon with the Disney purchase, and in doing so pushed everything to Legends as far as the books and the comics and all that, I started with like the launch of the books, and I was keeping up, I think, up to like Rogue One, which was, you know, just a couple years into it. And then I just didn't have time anymore to keep up with the volume of books that were coming out. And that's where the High Republic kind of, for me, was just I can't even jump into this. But I think it's cool that they developed this era. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, some of the characters out of those books and comics are actually making the leap into the show as well.
Well, I think that's
the Wookiee in particular, right?
I think the Wookiee's a different Wookiee. It's not the
same. Is it a different Wookiee? Okay.
Yeah. Because the Wookiee, I forgot his name. It was like Budi or something, Budiaga or something like that. But I did see it before, a kind of synopsis talking about the Wookiee. And I think he's called Kel Naka in this one. So I'm not sure if it's the same Wookiee. I mean, Wookiees live for 200 so plus years. So, I mean, it could be the same.
I have no idea.
But I think that, I mean, the High Republic is goes back quite a bit. So yeah, I don't know if it is the same. I think that's again a clever point that I just realized, like me saying that the time that it's set being at the end of the kind of High Republic, I think that makes sense because at the same time we don't have to have read all that stuff. I think that's something that with the Ahsoka show, some of the people who hadn't kind of watched Rebels felt a little bit kind of lost with. And with this High Republic, we don't have to have known what happened in that past stuff, because I think, you know, the enemy in that was the Nihil with the kind of space pirates, and I don't think that's part of this story. Mm-hmm. You know, we know they got defeated, and, you know, that's a past story. So it's kind of set in an era that you can jump in and not know about that, but there are going to be some tidbits that maybe crossover. I think there's one character, I know Rebecca Henderson, the actress, she's playing an older version of a character that's a kind of popular character in the original one. So I think some of them will probably kind of
Yeah, very few. But I think it's important that there is no required reading. You know, and that comes down to a lot of the supplemental stuff that we talk about in the Marvel and DC universe. And like, it's there to enhance, but not there to essentially put up a barrier for people to get into it. Like, this has to be pretty low barrier for entry. Like, if you understand the idea of lightsabers, the Force, and Sith, then you should be able to sit down and consume this show. I think that's what Star Wars needs for this. And that was the same with the Mando. If you understood the idea of, like, I don't know, what Yoda looked like, stormtroopers, and some concept of the idea that the Empire fell, then you could kind of just jump into the Mando and just go with the universe. And if we can rewind back a little bit with the Acolyte, I'm just actually going to read the premise here before we start talking about the trailer in a little bit more detail. So the Acolyte is set, as we said, at the end of the High Republic era, in a world of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers set approximately 100 years before Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. The Acolyte is a mystery thriller that will take viewers into the galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers. I already said that. A former Padawan reunites with her Jedi master to investigate a series of crimes, but the Force they confront are more sinister than ever anticipated. So...
Wait, like, I've never read that before. I didn't even know that. So they've actually said it's about 100 years prior. So I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've missed that completely. You're quite in tune.
I'm not a Star Wars fan anymore. Yeah, I'm clearly a fake fan.
Yeah, fake fan. So I will say the one thing that... Like, I'm super pumped for this, and I love Star Wars, and I love just getting into it. And, you know, there's some real cool scenes in there when you see all the lightsabers light up and the yellow and the green and all this. There's so many cool scenes in here. But I will say I am hoping for a broadening of the way or approach to telling the good, evil story. We've seen this Sith Jedi thing across three different trilogies now of movies. And I think that's why, like, stories and shows like Andor and The Mandalorian and all that really took off, because although set in the Star Wars universe, they were tackling topics and ideas and following characters that we didn't necessarily spend a lot of time with or see a lot in any of those trilogies. You got hints of stuff going on in the underworld, the underbelly, this, that, and the other thing. But again, this one is tackling familiar territory. And like I talked about at the start, there's the idea of seeing the familiar in the sense that it creates a low barrier for entry. But is this again more of the same thing that we've seen across 9 movies and several shows? Like, how many times can they... This is me just... Again, this isn't... I'm not bashing this thing at all. But it's me trying to pull on a thread here that after watching the trailer a few times, it's like, I feel like I just saw this in Ahsoka, and I feel like I've seen this across the sequel trilogy and the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. Like, this story about an emerging dark shadowy figure that carries a red lightsaber that is using the Force in an evil way, it almost feels like we're kind of retreading territory here. And so that's probably like the only concern, if I'm going to start with a concern as we dive into deep detail about this show, is that it has all the right elements, but what is the story that's going to be told that is going to be, or at least set it apart from what we've seen in the past in this ultimate good versus evil battle that Star Wars has depicted since 1977?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. And that's kind of why I started by saying that it was different than I was expecting. You know, I kind of felt that, especially with something like Andor, and even with partly with Ahsoka, it feels a little bit disconnected. It feels a little bit different. It's like they're trying something new, especially with Andor. And I kind of felt that was what they were doing with this. That's why I thought it was going to be a little bit more Night Sister focused. It's going to be on another world. It's going to be something that doesn't necessarily focus too much on the Jedi or them being a slightly back kind of aspect of the show. And it doesn't seem like that. It does seem like a very kind of High Republic focused movie, TV show. And I did feel that it felt quite familiar. You know, you have the apprentice and she sees fire and, you know, she's having these premonitions of maybe negative things, and then she becomes the, I think, one of the main character, Lee Jung Jae's apprentice, and then either she leaves or she's cast out because of her, mm-hmm. you know, her dark side, and she is that, the what seems to be the acolyte, I guess.
Yeah.
If she is, and it's a very, very, you know, it's a repeated story. It's something that we've seen, of course, with mm-hmm. with Anakin, and I am hoping that that isn't it, isn't everything about it. I do think there are different.
Feels like parts. It is. Like
it does, yeah. But I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, it might be just trying to tick boxes in the way that we're getting lots of different lightsabers and we're going to get these mm-hmm. different battles. I do like the aspect of it looks like there are characters, younger versions and older versions. They're all on different, they're investigating and they're all in different places and on different journey. And that's kind of what the High Republic comic books are kind of like. So I do feel that that might be a fun aspect of it. Daphne Keene, I didn't even know she was in this from Logan and from Dark mm-hmm. Materials. You know, oh, I'm really excited to see her character. And, you know, I do hope that they are going to do that in a way that we're going to see these separate stories, kind of like, you know, maybe like the original trilogy where everyone's off on their own little journey. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's try and have something a little bit interesting, a little bit different. I think for me, like I only got to watch the trailer once because I basically woke up, watched it and then jumped on the podcast. The one thing that was exciting for me, which I don't know, it could be total, I could be totally wrong, but is Acto in this trailer? It looks like it is, which is where Luke ends up when he goes into hiding.
Maybe. Oh, because there's a temple there, right?
Well, no, not the temple. There's a scene, and it's very short, but there's a scene where the acolyte, the I think it's the bad girl, the Amanda Stenberg's character. She's looking at a character, and it's just the dark silhouette on a rock, and it's like these black rocks, and it looks exactly like Acto, man, like the waves crashing.
But isn't that like an ancient Jedi temple?
But this is what I thought could be an interesting aspect of it. Because the thing is with Acto is it was the first, they said it was the first Jedi temple, but it's like ancient. And you know, like the Sith basically come from the Jedi, it's the breaking from the light side. Mm-hmm. And then you have, on Acto, there's that mural that was on the floor in The Last Jedi, which had the kind of yin and yang, good and bad side. So there was that aspect of the light and the dark, the balance, but there's also the pit that Rey goes in, and it's the dark side pit.
Yeah.
And she goes down there, and he says that it's strong with the dark side of the Force, which kind of implies that there's a presence of good and bad there, or light and
absolutely.
Dark. And I think the story with the cave that's in Empire Strikes Back, that Yoda on Dagobah takes Luke, that Luke goes down, the idea of that is that's so strong with the dark side because a Sith or a dark side user died there. I think was in another story. So that could be another aspect of this, whereas is there a possibility that this dark side possible Sith or Lord has been hiding on that?
It could be why Luke
ends up there. It could be how he investigates and how he finds that aspect of it. You know, something that's pre-Palpatine. You know, where did Palpatine come from? And it could be, you know, could be that. And then, again, because the era of where it's set, like, I am interested to see some story points play out, because is this, you know, I think the acolyte, the character that we see there, or the Force, the dark side user, she's clearly either following or possibly an apprentice of something bigger or darker.
I think I get the apprentice piece of it. And like, is it like Plagueis?
Well, that's what I mean. Is it going to be? Because if it's 100 years, it could, I mean, it's likely to be, or it's going to be Plagueis' master. I mean, that's a quick turnover if Plagueis died that quickly and then Palpatine took over. And I mean, it's possible, but.
Yeah, so Plagueis is, for those that don't know, Plagueis is was the master of Palpatine, that Palpatine killed, correct? When he tells a story to Anakin in episode 3 about Plagueis the Wise, I think he calls him.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he calls him. And he tells that story. And Plagueis is a character, actually. It was the one book, I believe, that transitioned over from the Disney takeover canon, where it was produced before the takeover or before them wiping the slate clean.
I don't think Darth Plagueis is canon. No, because I was disappointed.
Oh, okay. I always thought that book was canon. Maybe I'm wrong.
The character is, because, of course, he's mentioned in the prequels, but Episode 3, the book is Legends. I know that because, like, that's my favorite Star Wars book of all time. And, you know, I actually have it, and it has Legends written across the top. Like, I got
I have the version that came out before it was maybe relaunched into Legends. For some reason, I thought that book made the jump, but maybe it was a.
Yeah, I don't think he could have, because I think there are certain points that are in that couldn't really line up as well.
It would be interesting. I do see this. That was kind of one of my first thoughts when I saw, like, okay, the era this is sitting. You do see that scene in the trailer that it does appear that I think she's an apprentice. And it would be interesting to see, like, you can envision this show, one, having a Yoda cameo in there somewhere. And two, you know, how quickly does it accelerate through the 100 years up to Phantom Menace? Like, is this going to match it? Are you going to do multiple seasons? And then eventually you do see, you know, the emergence of the Emperor or Palpatine.
Yeah, the one thing I'm a little worried, I hope they don't pull a George Lucas and kind of retcon some things, because that's another thing that was kind of confusing. Is it Mace Windu says, or who says that the Sith have been extinct for a millennia or something like that? And it's they haven't, because it's like, but I
well,
mean,
maybe
that,
it's,
I guess we can't.
Maybe it's like that final form Sith, like. Or at least they thought that they'd been extinct, and like maybe like the definition of Sith to the Jedi in that era is different, in the sense that, you know, maybe we get to a point where like the Sith are actually something. I know there's always the rule of two and all that, and that seems to be a rule that is played with fast and loose throughout.
Well, with it being the Acolyte, that's another thing. Like, if it is a Sith apprentice of some kind, like the idea of the acolytes are not necessarily apprentices. It's not going to be two of them. There might be
followers, right?
A bunch of followers. Yeah, it's going to be people. That's why I thought it was more. It wasn't focused on the Sith side. So yeah, maybe you're right there. Maybe it's not. It's dark side users or Sith sympathizers, but they're not necessarily Sith.
Yeah,
I guess they couldn't. I mean, bringing Plagueis in, it would be tough, because if the Jedi are aware that he exists, then that would be quite problematic for everything that comes
absolutely.
After it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like, I think there's a lot of intrigue there, and there's, you know, there's some great characters, like you said, Daphne Keen's in there, and what's her name from that you see? She has a real Matrix look to her, Trini.
Oh, Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah,
she's from
Matrix.
Yeah.
She's Trini. Yeah, 100%. And so she's got a real look to her, like she's manipulating the Matrix there in some scenes.
Yeah, her fighting style, I love it in that, because that's kind of a style that we haven't seen so much. It's more defensive. She's not actually fighting. She's not attacking. Yeah. She's just dodging and stopping everything.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's really cool.
There's so much to play with, I think, in this era. And like you and I are talking about here, I think that there's a nuanced approach to this that is... has the potential to really work and do something big for the Star Wars universe and add to the Jedi lore and add to that grander Jedi story that we kind of always just see the tail end of. You know, we see the fall of the Jedi in the prequels, we see the absence of the Jedi in the original trilogy, and we see the rise, or I guess the end of the rise of the Jedi in the sequel trilogy. We never get to see them, I guess you could argue, in Episode 1 and 2, but the focal point isn't really on the Jedi. But we never get to see the Jedi at their peak doing whatever it is that they did. And this show is likely to, although again, we're finding ourselves at the tail end of the High Republic, we are likely to get to see a pretty substantial force, pun intended, of Jedi, and exploring the stories in and behind all that, the roots of it, more of the foundational pieces of the Jedi. Like, I think that is a really cool element that, for those that haven't read comic books or the books, that's never really been explored in any detail. We're always getting like the tethered end and the tattered pieces of what was the Jedi being shown to us. Even the Jedi we see in the original trilogy are Jedi that are kind of at the end of their reign. Like they've fallen so far that they've lost their way to the point where eventually it all basically dissolves in front of us over the course of three movies. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they position the Jedi inside of all this to the point where we get to see them actually doing what they do and then running up against some sinister forces here. And I think looking at the character names and all that, there is an element of the witches inside of this. There's a character that's like the leader of the Covenant of the Witches. If you look at some of the, so I think like you're saying, the Dathomir piece is going to be played with, or like the witches that we start to see even inside of the Ahsoka show and that we saw in, what was it, Clone Wars and Rebels and all that. So I think that element of the dark side is also going to be played with inside of this, maybe.
Yeah, I think it seems to be, like, again, with it being called the Acolyte, I think it does seem to imply in a way that it's, you have all these dark elements that they're kind of sympathizers or followers or of certain things. It might be like they're not the Night Sisters, but they're a version of witches who kind of take from some of their ideals and some of their ideas. And it's the same with the, maybe the Sith side, you know, there might be some Sith followers who want to see that. So yeah, I think so. And it'd be interesting too, if they actually focus a little bit on the kind of political side and the background side
of the
High Republic, because a lot of people didn't really like that aspect of the prequels. And I really did. I thought that was quite clever. And it'd be nice to have the High Republic being at their peak and actually get us to see that, but to see that transition of why they have to be governed and why they have to answer to people, you know, how they can't just make their own decisions and step in and do what they want to do. There's a lot of potential. I mean, even in the comics or the books, is the I think they're called Wayseekers. Don't hold me to that, man, but there's like they're like Jedi, but they're not Jedi. They're like Force users, but they're kind of like not gray Jedi, but they listen to the Force, but they're not actually part of the Jedi. So I think this is a time where like the Force is a little bit more used more freely, I guess. It's not as kind of governed and under strict rule, and you might have different versions of Jedi. And again, they probably have different powers. Like again, in the comic books, some of these Jedis have some insane powers that we've never seen before. So it'd be cool to actually see some of those that, you know, have Jedis like, you know, like Marvel superheroes. Each one of them has a certain talent, a certain part of the Force, and they can use that together or, you know, on their own journeys. And it's each of them have their kind of Force talents that they've learned. So, yeah, and that would make it kind of interesting. It'd be interesting to have Jedi, individual Jedi characters that you kind of root for. They're not all the same with the same power. You know, they're all very different and have different motivations. They have different feelings about the Force and have different ways of using it. So I hope they do that. I hope they do. I mean, that's it. I mean, my concern is just that window of 100 years.
It's too close.
It's quite limited.
Yeah.
You know, it can't go on for that long. It will have to end. Those characters will have to die, I guess. We never see them again.
Some capacity. They've shoehorned all that kind of stuff in with Rebels and Ahsoka and all that. So I'm not concerned about the living and dying. But I love the idea of your saying of exploring very different Force powers, because they explore a little bit of that in Rebels. Like Ezra can talk to animals, can't he? Or he has some power set where he's a bit more in tune with that. And yeah, playing with that, like, I'd love a flying Jedi. Would that be cool? Or something, some crazy wild stuff? Like, who knows? Some people might not like that.
To be honest, I would like some other enemies though. Like, I think that was what made the High Republic quite interesting. You have the Nihil, the kind of space pirates, but they're not as threatening as something like a Sith. But, you know, they're dealing with different conflicts that are quite hard to deal with. You know, there was a beast in that called the Levala, and it's like this kind of wolf kind of creature thing that can feed off the Force. And, you know, I want to see a bit more of that kind of fantasy side. Agreed. Let's not just have Jedis and Sith. Let's have more. Let's have some new villains. Let's not rush the High Republic. And yeah, I don't know. On the fence of is it from that trailer, it does seem like they might be. But fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see here on June 4th. We had a 2-episode premiere on Disney Plus, 8 episodes in total. So we'll have essentially, I guess, 7 weeks of this show starting in June. And so let's see how this all shakes out. I'm excited. We're going to be back into the Star Wars universe. You know, we've got this and I think Skeleton Crew this week, or this week, this year, I should say, mm-hmm. as we build towards the return of Star Wars on the big screen in the next couple of years, too. And so Disney Plus is going to continue to be the home of Star Wars storytelling. But let's move on to another movie that is very different from some of the movies that we've talked about here in the past, and that's Furiosa. And so
Furiosa.
The reason I wanted to bring this up is I know you're a big fan of this, and it was a cool trailer that dropped. I will say I haven't seen the new Mad Max, and this kind of George Miller sort of, I guess, universe that he's building here. It's, I don't know. I don't love this stuff. Like I have that's just personal preference, but this what is it? Like the cyberpunk super stylized, very metal sort of thing. Like I've just never really been into all of it. And when I watch this trailer, like it looks really cool. I love that Anna Taylor-Joy is in it. Chris Hemsworth, I really liked seeing him as the villain in this. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's like one of those things that, you know, maybe down the road I'll check this out. But one of the reasons I brought this up is because I kind of watched it. I was like, this doesn't feel like it's for me. But then I was like, I know Ian likes this. And so I want to hear your opinion on this trailer and on kind of this franchise and what this is added. Because this is a prequel to that Mad Max movie that came out, 10 years ago or whatever it was, correct? 8 years ago, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite a surprise. That was a surprise for me. Again, the waking up this morning and seeing those two trailers together. You know, we've already got one trailer already. And I thought it looked cool. And I'm excited for it. I think for me, the main excitement is, again, that kind of cinema experience that we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing Dune, I've seen Dune 2 twice now, and freaking out, man, that's just every time I watch it, it's just blowing my mind. And it's so absorbed into this experience and these visuals and this story. And I think that's what the first Fury Road did for me. It's up there for me as one of the best cinema experiences of my life.
Wow. Like, okay, cool.
You know, watching that in IMAX, and that was actually 3D when I watched it. And I just left the cinema just shaking. Like, wow, what did I just watch? Like, that was just intense. That was crazy. And there's some scenes that just kind of get your heart pumping. And that's what I really want from this. And I think that's where that stylized aspect comes in. It's supposed to be another kind of, it brings you into this world. It's very different than something that you've seen before. You know, there is an element of kind of fantasy. It's not 100% realistic, but it's still supposed to be kind of post-apocalyptic. You know, it's just the sounds and the visuals and the music that make those movies so great. And seeing this trailer, that second trailer got me even more excited. I thought it was just a really action-packed, heart-pumping trailer that really got me going, man. I think it's something that's continued from the start, but Anna Taylor-Joy, I'm not sold on that yet. I've said this before. Charlize Theron in Fury Road was amazing, and she's tough, man. Like, you can tell she's tough in that movie. Like, she's, you wouldn't want to mess with her. Anna Taylor-Joy doesn't have that yet, and I guess they're showing that transition from her being that kind of innocent girl that's kidnapped with her mother to becoming this warrior. But I just can't visualize her in that kind of action role. You know, she's not really built in a sense that looks like she's going to be threatening. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that someone, you know, that is slim or someone that looks quite feminine can't be, but I do feel that she doesn't have that presence yet that Charlize Theron had. And I hope she can pull it off. I mean, even in that trailer, she shouts something. It's like, it just didn't feel like anyone's like, whoa, she's scary. It's just like she's trying really hard to shout, but she's having difficulty. So I'm not sold on. That's the only element of it that I'm not sold on. But to see some of those characters again, it's going to be great seeing Hemsworth. You know, that's a character that wasn't in the other movie. Immortal Joe, the kind of white, pale skin, you know, the general. Seeing him again, and he was such a great character, and I love his kind of character design. So yeah, I'm excited for it. Like, the trailer did what it was supposed to do. It got me even more excited for it. So yeah, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, we didn't take it in the box office pool. It was kind of one that was, I think, left towards the end, but it could be, you know, it's got a good release date here on May 23rd. So it comes out in just a couple months and it's picking up on a pretty beloved franchise all in all. And it's going to be interesting to see how this thing shakes out. Maybe I gotta get this a chance. I'm so far behind on things. Like, I made this like big proclamation. I was going to watch Dune before Dune 2 came out. Guess you still hasn't seen Dune. Dune
2. Well, I put them in a similar box. Like, and that's why, seeing how successful Dune 2 has been, I imagine Furious is going to be successful too. You know, both of those first movies were movies that people talked about because of the cinema experience. They were kind of unexpected. People were looking forward to them, but people didn't realize how good they were actually going to be. And, you know, seeing how people have reacted to Dune 2, I imagine that Furiosa will have that. And the thing is with Furiosa, it doesn't even have to have a good story. It just has to be action-packed, and people will go and watch that one because there's nothing quite like it. Especially the, you know, that kind of stylized look that Miller has. So I think
it definitely has a look to it. Like, it you can definitely feel that. And like you're saying, when it comes to a success piece, like Dune 2 has already grossed over 200 at the domestic box office and half a bill worldwide. So that movie continues to be seen by lots of people. And you know, like you said, Furiosa's got, like, when I look at those, like, from a guy looking from the outside in, I think they, like, the style of George Miller and the style that you see in Dune and all that, like, they look very different to me. Like, one looks more like a cinematic, like or a cinematography experience, and Mad Max, like, there's just something with, like, the pace of and how it's shot and the camera angles, and it's definitely got a vibe to all of it.
100%,
But I think, again, that the cool thing about that is that it sets it apart from some of the other stuff that's coming out in theaters or has come out in theaters, and you know, then makes it a piece of something quite a bit bigger. And so being consistent but also at the same time being divergent from what we're seeing in the theaters is seemingly, you know, originality is a big piece of what was successful in the past and what has been successful the last couple of years. And both Dune and Furiosa here seem to be, at least from the trailer, seem to be delivering on that. So I'm interested to see how this one all shakes out. But, you know, when we're talking about the cinema experience, we cannot gloss over the fact that Spider-Man is returning to the big screen. All of the Spider-Men are returning to the big screen. In a celebration of, I think it's 100 years of Columbia and Sony, they are putting all 8 Spider-Man live-action films into the theaters again, starting on April 15th, and it'll be dubbed Spider Mondays, where you can go and experience all of those Spider-Men back in the movie theater, starting with Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, and then shifting over to The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, and then heading over to the MCU with Homecoming far from home, not far, far away. That's Star Wars. And of course, ending with No Way Home. You know, I looked online to see where the nearest theater was that I could experience any of these, and it was 500 miles south of me in the US somewhere.
So you booked your ticket?
So I booked my ticket. I'm just going to drive. Just going to drive. That's a no-go. It looks like they're coming out in AMC and Alamo and not the Alamo Drafthouse theaters. It's a cool concept. I love the idea that people are going to be able to go back and experience Spider-Man. We're not going to be able to do that here in Canada or Japan, but nonetheless, we have them all in Disney Plus. I think it's cool that when they kind of re-debut these things, and as a celebration of Spider-Man, and we're going to have a relatively large void of superhero films in the theaters in the coming months up until we get into July, where we get Deadpool and Wolverine. I think it's cool that Spider-Man's going to have another crack at all this, and that it all leads from essentially where it all began with Spider-Man and all of them coming together in No Way Home and kind of creating like this holistic Spider-Man universe. I think it's cool concept. It's, you know, I would probably maybe check out No Way Home if this was actually happening in Canada. But I definitely know our boys over at Vigilante 1939 are likely going to be checking out at least the Tobey Maguire versions of these once again.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I mean, I think it's an okay concept. I'm not too, it doesn't excite me in any way. Like for me, not, I don't think we're going to get it. To be honest, in Japan, the cinemas here, especially the biggest cinema that's near me, they do a thing every month or every couple of weeks where they just bring back old movies anyway.
Yeah.
So like they put like Jurassic Park on just 1 week and they'll put like Inception on another week just randomly. With the Spider-Man movies, none of them really need me to watch it on a big screen. So
yeah, like, I'm kind of the same.
I mean, the Tobey Maguire, the first one, the 2002 one, I mean, the only reason I'd watch that in the cinema is for kind of nostalgia. I like that movie. I'm not a huge Tobey Maguire Spider-Man guy. But yeah, I mean, there are people out there who are, and it might be interesting for them. But as you said, they're on Disney Plus. Like I could just as well watch them at home and have exactly the same experience. You know, the reason why No Way Home was so great in the cinema was the reaction of the audiences
and the
surprise of the things that we're going to see. But now we know what's in the movie. It's just going to be there's no need for me to watch it on the big screen. And there are certain movies. There are a lot of movies that, you know, visually and just how the movie's made, you know, on the big screen, they're better. But I don't feel that Spider-Man movies necessarily need a big screen to enjoy them in any extra capacity. So
I agree for the most part there. The only reason I would go see No Way Home on the big screen is because I think when it came out, so it came out at the end of 2022 and we were kind of just getting through the tail end of COVID there, and I would say that my experience on that was hampered a bit by I was still a little uncomfortable in like very, very public spaces, like confined public spaces. And so I felt that my whole experience was dampened by that. But other than that, like I'm kind of there with you. I don't think I'd be, unless it was with a group of people going to go just for nostalgia's sake, just go see some of these in the theaters and all that.
People are going to go and pay to watch Spider-Man 3 in the cinema. I don't.
You never know, man.
Amazing Spider-Man 2. I mean, I don't know.
Nostalgia. Some of those movies are old enough that they're nostalgic and people will pay. People will absolutely pay to go experience all of this. I think it'll be fun, but it's not something that I'm necessarily into. But I look forward to hearing from those that absolutely do have some of the experiences inside of this. But let's end this episode with an experience that I'm going to have this weekend and you're going to have in a week and a bit.
Yeah, I'm been searching for those advanced tickets, but there doesn't seem. We get it a week later.
Yes, Sony movie that is debuting, the Japanese company.
Well, every Sony movie. It's like everyone. As I said to you before, like it's good job it's only a week because the last one was like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
It's like everyone was...
I remember that. I remember you being like, oh, man, you've all seen
Afterlife. I just wanted to stay off Twitter, man. I just wanted to like punch the screen every time I saw people talk about it. It's like,
it's truly not fair. But Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife, the continuation of the Ghostbusters universe stemming all the way back to Ghostbusters. I am super excited about the experience. Carlos rang me up the other day and said, do you want to go see Ghostbusters? I said, hell yeah, brother. So he treated to the Ghostbusters tickets. We're seeing on Thursday night, opening night here.
Wow.
And we got a whole slew of, you know, he said, you know, are you excited for this? And I said, absolutely. And he said, why are you excited? Just out of curiosity, not that he isn't. But I said, the Ghostbusters, at least the stuff I'm plugged into as far as like a community goes through, I watched like a bunch of YouTubers like YHS Podcast, Geek Dad Life, and a few others. They love Ghostbusters so much and they amplify the voices inside of that community. And like Ghostbusters News is another big one. They're just so excited and so positive about this movie, the community, and uplifting the community. And then you look at all the Ghostbusters Club. Our friend Rob from Generation X Wing has been recently going through like joining like the Ghostbusters cosplay group and all that.
Ah, I saw him in his costume. Yeah.
Yeah, his costume. Great, yeah. And like this guy's building, you know, him and the guys that Jamie, one of the guys he podcasts with, talking about building proton packs, all the success that Hasbro's had with their HasLab stuff, with the Ghost Trap and the proton pack. The community is just very vibrant and very supportive of the brand, which is reflected on what I see online. It's not this kind of shit show that you see in Star Wars and Marvel and all that. And so the community itself is so positive and just have embraced this renaissance of Ghostbusters over the past like 5 years or so since the announcement of Afterlife and again the success at Hasbro, and then of course getting a follow-up here with Frozen Empire. You know, we got to watch a lot of those guys on the world carpet premiere of Frozen Empire. I've not watched any reaction videos or heard any reviews or anything. I think they kept the review embargo all the way up to the 21st on this one, so Thursday. Like there's going to be that's when the first reviews are being released. But ultimately at the end of the day, like I am just excited to sit and experience Ghostbusters again. And yeah. I've loved especially the second trailer for this one. And it's a franchise that I'm so deeply connected to on so many weird levels, like as a kid through the cartoons, as a toy collector, as someone who didn't fully appreciate what Ghostbusters actually was until I was quite a bit older, like the actual film and Ghostbusters 2. Like it was just a really great franchise that I grew up with, forgot about for a very long time until I started collecting again and the movies started coming out, even with the kind of revamped version with the women Ghostbusters and all that too. Like I still enjoyed all of that. And so it's been a cool experience to watch, like I said, this renaissance of Ghostbusters and it coming together again with another big screen film with the original cast, with the cast from Afterlife. I'm just amped up about Ghostbusters, man. How are you feeling about, you know, I know you're still a week out from this, but how are you feeling about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire just, you know, a week or so out from seeing it on the big screen again?
Yeah, I think, you know, you said it perfectly. I'm just as excited. I can't wait for it. You know, we grew up in the same time. We grew up with the Ghostbuster toys and the real Ghostbusters, and we have that kind of connection to that franchise. And I think, yeah, like just seeing how people react to Ghostbusters, it doesn't have that, you know, it doesn't have that kind of era of Ghostbuster fans who are very demanding of what they want to see, and the fans who are disappointed or hating on stuff. And you know, it kind of had like that kind of a bit of a gap. And I think that what's left with the people who love Ghostbusters are people who have that kind of connection, who really love the fun aspect of it. You know, it's kind of a community that doesn't take itself super seriously. They realize how fun Ghostbusters is and how wacky it is, and how, you know, it doesn't have to be so realistic and it doesn't have to be so deep. You know, it's something that's just fun and exciting, and it's just a cool concept. Ghosts. I mean, people hunting ghosts. Yes. It's such a simple concept. It's just so. Again, it's just so much fun. So for me, yeah, I'm just as excited. I've seen some reaction videos of, you know, I sent you one from the YHS podcast guys, just because, you know, they're just a great bunch of people, and just the smiles on their faces when they came out and how excited they were and how pumped they were and how they were just like, how they said they had such a good time. That really did it for me, because, you know, I not necessarily that I trust those guys, but I just know that they're the type of people who had that similar connection that we do. They're the type of people who just want to have fun, you know, with their collecting and their content. And, you know, I think that's exactly what we're going to get from this. There hasn't been any reviews. Yeah, so I haven't seen any reviews. But there have been people talking about it online, which is really cool. And I like that there were some people showing like Rotten Tomatoes, and I know we don't really believe anything they say, but they were showing how the critic score was a little bit lower, kind of in the 60s, but the audience,
I think that was Afterlife.
That was Afterlife, yes. Sorry, yeah. Afterlife. That's what I mean. Yeah. So they were showing the Afterlife reviews and they're saying how, you know, it's probably going to be the same kind of thing. And I like that. You know, I like that it's the audiences are really connecting with these things. Critics, you know, jumping in and bashing things and wanting something deeper, wanting something more and deconstructing things. So, yeah, I'm past that now. And I think a lot of us are. And it's nice to see the audiences coming back and just wanting something that's either super fun or something that's original. I think the Ghostbusters stuff is the fun aspect of it. I mean, when I went to watch Dune 2 at the IMAX, man, when I walked into the lobby, man, I had the biggest smile on my face because they just had the whole lobby. It's huge. It's like a massive circle and the whole floor was a Ghostbuster logo.
Really? And
they just put the Frozen Empire huge logo on the floor and they had like this big kind of cardboard thing where it had like ghost traps and you could pick up a cardboard proton pack and take a photo there and stuff. And it's just great to see that, you know, the Star Wars, the Ghostbuster logo, you know, back out there, people excited for this franchise. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, after Afterlife, people are coming out and saying that they really did love that movie. And I think that came out at a very bad time, an inconvenient time. And it just shows that a lot of people did watch that movie at home. A lot of people did enjoy that movie. And
because that was pandemic one. That's another one.
That was another pandemic one. Yeah.
Watching on still.
Yeah. It went straight. It went to streaming really quickly, didn't it? But like the one thing I really hope from this is that it does bring in a wider audience in terms of age. You know, I think young people haven't been exposed to Ghostbusters for such a, you know, it's just been such a long time. And like I said before, the concept of Ghostbusters is just so simple and so fun that I think it'd be nice to see children connecting with those characters again. And that's why it's nice to have a young and an old cast. It does feel like it is a celebration of the old for us old dudes, and then you know, it also opened to the younger generations to bring new people in and that passing of the torch. So I hope it's successful in that way. And you know, from a selfish point of view, I just hope it's super fun and I have a good time with it.
I think that's all we can ask for out of this thing is to have some nostalgic references, which they're definitely going to have a bit of fun with the content and how it's executed. And just give us just something to smile about. Like, that's all I want from this is to smile when I'm walking out of the theater. You know, I'm not really super fussed about the story and making sure it all lines up. I just want something to smile about. That's it. That's a simple ask from all of this. And I think we're going to get it. You know, it's hard for me to look at that logo and not smile. So I think we're there at the end of the day. Super excited to see this one. So that comes out this weekend, guys. Make sure you go check out Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And if it's for one reason only, to support Ian and I in the box office fantasy draft, or fantasy pool, I should say, because we did take this, much to the chagrin of
Ian. We didn't
Ian
take Doom 2.
We probably should have. but I was playing with my heart, and my heart said Ghostbusters. It didn't say sand, because you know what, it gets everywhere, it gets in everything, it's very coarse and I hate sand. So I went with ice as a Canadian, went for Ghostbusters, and here we are, Ian, on the precipice of having our first movie of this draft, of this pool, hit the board this week. And at the end of the day, doesn't matter to me, as long as, like I said, I'm smiling when I come out of this, and I know I will be. So stay tuned for our discussion on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And guys, I will say this as we close out here, just go have some fun this weekend. I, you know, we'll get back into talking some collecting here in the not too distant future, but I leap back in, I got some vintage Star Wars, I got some JP stuff over the last little bit, and I've been having fun with collecting again, and it's been great. We've been going to a lot of, what do you call them, like estate and vintage sales and all this as a family, and picking up random stuff. So it's been really cool getting back into it. And so go see Ghostbusters, go on a toy hunt, just go embrace your nerd, read a book, go find the High Republic, read some comic books there, just enjoy, embrace a little bit of nerd, because it's getting cold. Come join me,
Helldivers 2. Hunt some bugs with me, man. I need a crew.
There you go. Whatever that sentence means, PC, go do
come
that.
Help me out.
So, guys, again, we want to just thank you for coming back here each and every week and escaping with us into the world of nerd. Just even for a little bit, just taking that break, like Ian said, shake it off some of the stresses of life and just jumping into Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and beyond. And we think we covered most of that this week. If you want to take a little bit of a deeper dive into DC and Marvel, you can go back actually one episode. I talked about all the bits and pieces coming out of those universes on the film side of things in last week's episode. But Ian, my friend, you know, with all of that being said and another week of nerd behind us, we have to say goodbye. And to do that, I must say thank you once again to everyone. And at the end of the day, for the Nerd Room, I'm Tim.
And I'm Ian.
And thank you so much for entering the Nerd Room.